Hey, and welcome back. Now that we're into out of the mini course, we're going to deep dive on a couple of really exciting topics. This one is this session is going to be on data storage, backup, and roaming. This is going to be really fun because there's a lot of new stuff, not necessarily new APIs, although there are some new APIs, but the way that data storage works, especially the roaming data storage, connecting your phone device to your tablet device is really exciting.
It's one of those real exciting convergence things where we can really do some cool stuff.
It is really, it's really a lot of fun to demo, and it's a lot of fun to show, and it's just it's one of those exciting moments. This is really working. It's really real. We're talking about an app that lives genuinely across all devices. So we're going to cover a lot of different topics. We're probably going to go a little fast because there's just so much to talk about with data storage and roaming. We're going to talk about settings. We're going to local settings. We're going to talk roaming files and settings. We're going to talk about the Windows Storage API. How do we serialize objects in XAML and JSON? How do we store information onto SD cards for our application data? So how do we get to that information? How do we store to it? And then we're going to talk about a concept called known folders, which I could try to explain, but it makes more sense after we've covered all the other stuff to cover known folders, and you'll be able to see what a really powerful concept we have in the known folders API. So let's get started with app data locations. There is a lot of place that an app can get, a lot of places an application can get data from. It can get data from a network, through either a direct connection to that network or through to a database or a service or through a background transfer. We can use file picker APIs to go to the file system, which can go to OneDrive, and we can pull files into our application that way.
We're going to be talking about them in the end of the next session.
Yep. We can go to our known folders, and these are folders like our pictures folders, our video folders, our music folders. They have there are versions of these on Windows as well as on Windows Phone. We do need some direct access needs in the manifest to say, hey, I want access to these things. We can read or write to the SD card if there's an SD card on our system. There's a installation folder. This is where all of our app information on install goes, and this is read-only. We have application data folders. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get rid of this pin at the top, and I am not sure where. Okay, it's going to live there for now. Application data folders, and we have three kinds of those: the local folders, roaming folders, and temp folders. And then we have Credential Locker, which is a place, a secure place where we can store our password information, username and password credentials. And this also roams. Now,
I was going to say, I think one important thing to pick up on this is that actually those local folders, the app data folders, that is the local storage. It's like storage area.
Right.
And yet the known folders and the file pickers, they allow you to go outside of the sandbox and get stuff that's not private to your app.
Yep. Yeah. The stuff in the circles is all stuff that's to our app inside the sandbox. And then everything from the networks over to the right is stuff that lives outside of our application. And we're not going to cover file pickers, as Andy mentioned. We're going to he's going to cover that in a totally enough information for a totally different talk.
Next one, in fact.
And we're not going to talk about networks and background transfer.
I'm doing that tomorrow.
But we're going to talk about everything else here.
Well, you get going.
Right, yeah, so let's get started. Go. So first of all, a quick overview. The package manager installs our application files into the installation folder. This is read-only access. And the reason this is read-only access is because we're going to write over these files when we update our application. And so we don't want to write anything in there that we're then going to overwrite the next time we do an update. And so if you have something like a database that you're installing with your application, it's not going to be writable because you're just going to overwrite it with the next install that you do. More helpful for reading and writing are the application store datas in the local folder. Here we can write settings and properties using the app dictionary. We can write unstructured data into isolated storage files, and we can write structured data into database files. So we have a bunch of data storage areas, and I'm going to go do an overview of those. The first one is our local storage area. This is kind of the normal way of saving data. This should be considered your default way. You can use all the space on the phone. There's no restrictions on how much data you can store in your local folders. And this sticks around from update to update. So if you update the application, the local folder and settings just gonna stay there. The roaming folder and settings is a limited amount of space. It's about 100K, and it's saved to the user's OneDrive, even though it doesn't take up any of the user's OneDrive allotment. So it's kind of free information that the user can get on that they get on their OneDrive that's dedicated to each application. It is accessible by any instance of your application that is opened on the user's account across any number of Windows and Windows Phone devices. And so that's where the roaming settings and folder becomes really valuable, is the fact that local lives on your phone or on your tablet or desktop or laptop application, but the roaming lives everywhere. And it gets updated across all of your devices.
So in many ways, with Silverlight, you would have used local settings for anything that was kind of settings related.
Right.
Actually, the roaming settings almost becomes the default for most of this stuff, because it's usually about personalization, and you want that personalization stuff, their preferences and things that needs to roam across all the devices.
Yeah,
so should use the roaming settings first, unless it's really specific to where that app is running, then you use local settings.
Right, and you can use the roaming settings for any number of things. If you have a similar navigation path on your phone device and your tablet device, you could save your navigation information. What page was I on last? Open that page up on my tablet. Then there's the temp folder, and this is just temporary storage. The scenario that I keep coming back to with temp is if you're loading up a bunch of tweets, you load them and you want them to be there the next time the user is there, store them in the temp file, because after a certain amount of time, they don't care. And when there's a low storage condition, the system's going to go through all the temp folders of all the applications and start wiping them all. Now, these three areas of storage all fall under the Windows.Storage.Application.Data API. But there's one other place where we can store information locally, and that is inside the Windows.Security.Credentials. This has a construct known as a password vault, and this is a place where we can store credentials. It's got a credential locker. It's secure storage for password credential objects, which are usernames and passwords. And this is fun because this is also data roamed across multiple devices. So if you do log into a system on your phone, you can take that login information and apply it to the application that's been installed on your laptop or desktop or any other Windows device or any other Windows phone device. So the application data namespace provides access to these three storage folders. And there's really kind of these five places to store the data. There are three storage folders and two settings places. The storage folders are an object that represent a folder, and you can use it to access folders and files and content and that sort of thing. It's kind of a traditional file storage system. The settings, local and roaming settings, are application data containers, which are represent just key value pair settings dictionary. And so this would be very lightweight storage. Strings are very, very lightweight objects that you would store inside of your settings. So let's talk about local and roaming settings. Using local and roaming settings is actually almost identical, except for the fact that one's local and one's roaming. The code for doing it is we say, what's our setting? Is settings.values, and give it a key, and then give it a value. The value can be any sort of object. and we can simply remove that by using a dictionary .remove to remove any sort of any of the settings that we've stored.
So you don't have to. There's no save method to persist it.
Nope.
Like we used to have to do with Silverlight.net APIs.
Yep. Yep.
It's
no.
It's just persisted.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's super simple, super lightweight. I think part of the goal is you don't want to have that sort of async await going to a folder or getting going to a folder, going to a file, pulling it up, because the settings might also be a good place to store things like the transient information that we were talking about earlier. So the roaming settings in the roaming folder is all about having one app on lots of devices reflecting using and accessing one data set. If we publish two versions of our application, one for Windows Phone and Windows Phone and Windows Store, we can roam all that app data across those different devices. All we have to do is assign the same package family name to each version of the application. This takes the form of a folder or a settings dictionary, and they're just automatically stored on your OneDrive. It's limited to the application data.roaming storage quota, which we said is about 100K, but you can query that API and say, how much space do I have left? And when that space is gone, nothing breaks. Your roaming settings aren't being saved anymore.
They just start acting like local settings.
They just stop working from device to device, but they'll still work on your local device. So, when we save something in the roaming settings or the roaming folder, the sync engine transfers that data over to OneDrive based on sets of triggers: user idle, battery, network, lock screen. And then it will it saves that information, and then the other clients are updated. Usually, this will happen when the application is launched, but maybe it could even be happening as the application launches. In some interesting situations, you could have the same user account on multiple devices, and it could just update in real time. That's not actually even an ideal scenario, but it could happen.
Yeah.
Using the roaming settings is really just as easy as using the local settings. We simply have our application data container, roaming settings, and we just save a value to it. And then that is a persistent on the device, shared with other devices. On Windows 8.1, if you've used the roaming settings on 8.1, there's a high priority. You say, this is a key setting value. I want you to store it now, do it now. That won't do anything on Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Reading the roaming settings is just like reading the local settings. We just call that value. We can call it down. And we'll have to cast it in many cases if it's a string that's very easy to cast. So this the name space that we're or the key name that we use is going to be reflected across multiple devices. We can go ahead and listen for when that data changes using this data application data.current.datachanged event listener, and this is that sort of scenario where you save it something on one device and the application is running on another device and it just updates from device to device. This will be fired. If the application is active at the time of the change.
But typically, your app, when it's launching, it'll be reading out of roaming settings. So if it's changing in the meantime, it'll pick it up.
Yeah, that's just for when the application data is changing while you're running the application.
Yeah.
So we can store that data in the roaming folder as we would on any folder, any device. All the sync takes place in the background. It's good. What is it good for? Like you said, it's good for theme customization information or some basic user information. I would say that it's good for like a user avatar, but avatars can usually be more than 100K, so probably not, right? So no icons, don't put images in there. Basic data and simple information about states, where you are in the application, how the application looks. Maybe permissions for geolocation or something like that. The synchronizing is very, very simple, and it's the last writer wins. So if you wrote on the phone, and then 2 seconds later you wrote on your device would they both sync up, and the synchronization would just say, okay, who was last? That's the winner. We can install an application on multiple unlocked devices. We can debug the roaming folder with a device connected to the PC. But when we're locking it, we need to make sure that all our files are stored closed correctly. I really just want to jump into the demo. Really, I don't want to talk about it anymore. Because this is a fun demo, and it's a really exciting it's a really exciting API, or a really exciting platform to feature to show off. Okay, here we go.
Cheese warning. Now, I have to jump in here for just a second, because my good friend, Mr. Robert S. Miles, Windows Client MVP now, formerly Windows Phone MVP, and before that, we were all in Windows Mobile, you know. He wrote a lot of demos. He worked with me on a lot of the early jump starts, and all these demos always involved cheese. And he did actually do some work. So thanks, Rob, for the work on this module, because cheese has made it into the jump start, which is good, because it wouldn't be the same if we didn't have any cheese. So,
well, there's
cheese warning.
Cheese warning. Yeah. Okay. So here we have two applications. We have one for Windows 8.1. We have one for Windows Phone. Now, you could build this as a universal application, no problem, but you can also build it as two separate applications, and the key to this is that we have this package store association. So you can't test roaming data across multiple devices unless you have associated your phone and your Windows application with an ID in the store. So just a caveat there. So we're going to go ahead and run this on the local machine here. I have it pop up. Come on. Let me see if I can minimize, restore down. Is there any way to get rid of this? Okay, I'm gonna jump back out for a second and change the main page.xaml so we can actually see all of our UI. That's really disappointing. I'm sorry about that, everyone. I have to stop the application. Okay. I'm just gonna give it a big margin.
Because of this blue bar that's...
Because of the blue bar that I don't know how to get rid of right now.
Yeah.
Okay, run it again. Okay, so we have two options. We have out of cheese and cheese maintained. Right now, the cheese is secure. And so if we skip over to our phone application, we're going to run this on a device, and this does need to... you could run this on an emulator, but you would need to log into your application. If you run on the, you'd need to log into your
Microsoft
account,
which you can do within the emulator.
Right.
You can go into settings and accounts and enter into your Hotmail or Outlook.com or whatever. Yep.
But for this case, it's just easier to run this on the device. So I tap this out of cheese warning. I'm out of cheese. I need to panic. And if we wait, and so we're going to try to trigger that event. Update by locking the application. When we do that, here we see this is our Windows application. We had registered that event, so that when the data changes, we want to update the status. And so we can go to update status. You can run it, and if we jump back into our application, we see that setting has been persisted across both across the application onto the other device using roaming settings. And so that was like three lines of code to save that setting, and then an event handler to handle the change, and now we've synced data between our two devices.
You said about needing to associate the app with the store, so it's probably just worth saying that you just need to right click on your project in Visual Studio, and there's a menu option for associate this app with the store.
Yeah, as long as you
have the same name.
Yeah, as long as you have a developer account, you don't even have to go to dev.windows or dev.windowsphone.com.
You can do it from Visual Studio.
You can just right-click and do it from Visual Studio.
You just need to make sure your phone app and your big Windows app have got the same name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, moving on from the local and roaming settings and folders, we're going to talk a little bit about file access. There are a lot of different ways to access files. Here's just a simple table on accessing files. So this is file access for information and files that we've stored on our local, our roaming, and our temp folders. We can use the MS app data to get the app data folders and MS AppX to get the installation folder. So
yeah, you've got these two flavors, haven't you? You can use you can use these kind of these weird URIs to get at it, or you can use the direct storage folder references like that you got at the bottom there. So
The interesting thing about the URIs is the URIs will actually work with images as well. Mm-hmm. So you can take those URIs, and if you have an image that you've stored somewhere, you can connect to it directly in your XAML using this URI. You can also use it to drive your live tiles. And so that's one of the benefits of the URI, URI system for accessing this data. Keep in mind the MS AppX for installation folder. I use that all the time if I have data that I want to preload inside of an application. So to write a complete file, we need to open up our storage folder. We need to create a new storage file within that folder, and then we can just use file.io to write to it.
These file.io APIs are really cool and really simple. Simple to read and write to files with those. Yeah, we didn't.
Yep. And they're all.
We had some storage APIs in Windows Phone 8. Mm-hmm. Those were some of the few that came over in the first.
The converged.
But the
APIs.
File.io ones sadly were not there. But they're in now in Phone 8.1.
Yep, and they use the full await async method so that it makes it very easy to do file writing even if you're writing large files. Yep. So we'll set our target folder. We can set an action to replace the file, action if the file already exists. And then once we have that file in there, we can read it by grabbing the folder that we want and giving it the file name, and we can just read that into a result. So let's take a look at writing files. Stop all the applications I have running. And open up. Open up this new one. Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and run the application quickly. I'm going to run it to my device. And we can type some stuff into the text, into our text app, some stuff. And we can write that to our file. And of course, we can read stone stuff. That's good too. And then we can read that back from our file. Let's take a quick look at how we're doing that inside of the application. And it's surprisingly just like the code that we saw inside of the slides. We grab that folder, in this case, a local folder. We create a file in that folder, and then we simply write to that file. Very simple, three lines of code. And reading it is grabbing that folder, giving it the file name, and reading the result out.
By the way, you know that blue bar on the top?
Yep. Did you figure out how to get rid of
this
that?
There's a pin thing up on the top left.
I've been pushing the pin.
Oh, all right, okay. It's just broken.
So,
yeah. That's kind of weird. Live with it.
It makes me sad. Okay. All right, we'll move ahead. So in addition to that, the simple strings, we can also use these streams to write to file, to write to the file I/O. The key concept around strings is that they're, I'm kind of losing my place here. They handle the difference in latency between one type of storage, the memory, and the other type of storage, the network or file system. So we found it's important to help developers understand storage file and storage folder these are the analogs of like path names and not file handles. Streams are the analog of file handles. So when we have an open stream that the file is open, having the storage file does not hold the file open. The file I/O and the path I/O APIs encapsulate, they open and close. So you don't see it here, but you do see it with the streams.
Yeah, so Yeah, I've got this open transacted right here, async.
Right. So using the streams, and I think the streams is how we would do things like saving image files, those larger files to storage. But we'd open up that storage storage folder, we'd open up that storage file, and then we'd use the storage stream transaction, and that's going to open up a stream for us, and we'll use our data writer to simply to just take that content that we have and stream it into the file. So another demo, this one using string using the stream. I need about 3 times as much space here. okay, so what this demo is going to do is we're going to open up a file, and then we're going to keep that file open while we continuously leave it open to write some stuff to it. Then we'll be able to close the file and read it back. So the way, take a look at the code for this. So here's the code where we open up our storage file. We grab our folder. We open up our stream for writing. And then we can keep that stream open and write to it over and over again. So run that application, pull up the device. It launches, and we can write some things. Oh, open up our, there we go. Open up our stream at first, write some things. We append that. We can do, this as many times as we want. And one more time. And we'll close that stream. And now the stream is closed. It's written to the file. And we can just go ahead and read that file. And we could even go ahead and open that file and write some more stuff to it. Append it, close it, read it. And you see how we get. We open it, we append, we close it. And the stream just keeps that open so that we have an easy way to continue writing to our files. Okay, now let's talk about using XML and JSON serializers. These are important because data. If we want to write something that's more than just a simple string, we're going to probably not want to build up an entire XML file or JSON file by hand. So using these serializers is going to let us build, save objects and data that's a little more complex than simple strings.
Well, it's a key part of what I was talking about in the last module, where you've got some objects in memory that obviously, and when you're working with collections of objects, they're all in memory. But then when the app suspends, mm-hmm. you need to resave all that data back down into a file, and the way you do that is through a serializer. Yeah.
Right. And so this will just take all of our objects, turn them into text. We can save the text and then simply read it back. So there are a couple of tricks around serialization. The objects must have a parameterless constructor. If you have a structure that takes in parameters, then it's going to fail it at a serialization. Private and static members of that class are not going to be persisted because they're private and static. The serializer is not going to be able to read private, and it's not going to be able to construct static. So if we add members to the class,
The upgrade scenario. You need to be careful about.
Yep.
If we ship a new version of the app and you've added some new fields to it.
Right.
And then you try and restore a file that was serialized before the update. Well, you've got to handle that situation.
Right. And this is actually more of a problem with XML data than it is with JSON data. The JSON data contract serializer tends to be a lot more forgiving. Especially if you're adding more parameters as opposed to taking them away.
Actually, we don't mention it in this deck, but that thing about versioning, there is some stuff in the application data namespace. You can get the version, your current version, and set a version.
Oh, that's right,
and it assists that away for you. So you can actually say, okay, I'm version 1.000 of my app. And then on an upgrade, you can actually bump the version, the logical version number of your state data to 1.1.00. And that helps you to keep track of stuff and figuring out in those upgrade scenarios how you're going to do it.
Yeah. So using Serializer is actually pretty simple. We get that stream that we talked about earlier, and we can just hand that stream to our data contract JSON Serializer along with an object that we want to save. So, I'm sorry, I kind of jumped ahead of myself there. We create our Serializer, and when we create our Serializer, we give it the type that we know we want to serialize.
So customers here is an object that's actually is a collection of customer objects.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. And then we say this is the type we want you to serialize, and then we give it the stream we want to serialize to, the stream that we saw pulled up in the storage in the stream demo before. We grab the storage and we grab the stream of the file. We hand that stream and the serializer the stream and the object. And it'll just write the object to that stream in a serialized manner.
In
just like that.
Just like that, yeah.
So the read process is pretty simple, same sort of thing, where we create a serializer with the certain type that we want to deserialize. And then as we saw in a previous demo, we need to read that object in and cast it as the type that we want to get back. In this case, we're casting it as the customer's object. XML serialization is pretty similar. We create our XML serializer the same way we created our data contract JSON serializer.
And there's no real reason to use one or the other, is there?
Well, JSON tends to be more lightweight format, so it'll work a little faster.
I mean, sometimes I guess you're going to want to. You might serialize some objects and then send that over a network. You might do that. So
in many cases,
one or the other. But
Personally, when I use the XML serializer, it's because I'm dealing with some sort of API.
Yeah.
And not necessarily with file types. Otherwise, I'll use JSON. The JSON serializer. A little bit about credential lockers, which is that last way that we can save. Last funny little space where we can save data. The credential locker is created to securely store and roam the credentials that we have. And so it's an API to store just username, password credentials in a secure way. We're talking secure storage, we're talking credential isolation, and essentially we're talking roaming. So apps can only access their own credentials. That's important, right? We don't want anybody to be accessing your credentials, some other application credentials, and we don't want other applications accessing your credentials. So we have our first application, and it sends some credentials over the credential locker. It creates this app sandbox boundary so that another application, even though everything's being stored in the credential locker, where you're not going to have cross-app pollution of credentials.
I guess what you were saying is the credential locker is kind of like an OS service in the same way that the roaming data is a kind of an OS service, and it's doing all that for you.
Yeah. So even they're saving the same place, but it is secure and it's parsed out. And then the fun part, credentials roam across devices, and this is really exciting because if you have services that your application is using, and those services require these credentials, you have to log in one place, not across 1,000 devices, and you'll be able to use that service with the credentials that you've stored. So credential locker is different than our storage APIs, is different than our settings APIs, but it's still pretty simple. We create a password vault for our application. We create a password credential, and the password credential actually works very similar to that key value pair. Instead of a key value, it's a key, a username, and a password. Then, in order to retrieve that, we call our password vault, and then we can find the resource by the resource name that we've determined.
There's a few other methods on it as well for getting them out, but essentially it's just another string-valued dictionary.
Right. So. The one that's been specifically designed to A, roam, and B, be secure.
The roaming's cool, yeah, as you say. Right. You can do login on one and then pick up your tablet. Whoa, I'm already in. That's
right,
cool.
Right. Yeah. Now, I'm going to have to start doing that on my tablet because all of my passwords are too long to put in on a phone. So... The last storage space we're going to talk about is Known Folders. Known Folders is pretty fun. It's an API that simplifies the view the developer has of accessible user data on the phone. So we're not talking about data that's been stored by the application necessarily. We're talking about data that's been stored in our pictures, in our videos, in our music folders.
So this is the user's data. You can call this user data rather than app data.
Yes.
So.
Yep. Yeah. And the neat thing about Known Folders is that it will access Known Folders on your default device as well as the SD card. So you could put an SD card in with a bunch of music files, and it can automatically be known by the Known Folders and included in that. You don't have to, when you take the SD card out, it just gives you back all the available data. So it's kind of, we can use the file open picker, and this will also give us access to these Known Folders, or we can just pull Known Folders straight into our application. As I said, it combines this sort of internal storage with the SD card storage. So if we say, give me the Known Folders for all the pictures libraries, it's going to get our internal storage picture libraries and our SD storage picture libraries and combine that view into a single view. And getting it is just really, really simple. All we have to do is say, here, pictures, await, my windows.storage.knownfolders.pictures, video, music, camera, whatever, .getFilesAsync, and it'll give us information about all the files inside of those folders. So let's see how that works. I might not have pinned that demo. There it is. Okay. Okay. So here is our Known Folders. And what we're going to do is we're just going to list pictures that we have inside of our camera roll on the phone. And we're going to put all of those into one by one. Into a list box. This is one of those cases in which we do want to use a list box, which is you're running a demo. I'm actually going to put a breakpoint there. And we ask for the pictures. And we actually look at our pictures and you see we have the count, so we know, we see we have access to every single one of those images. We run it and, there we go. And here are all of the file names for all of the images that I have on this device. And we can do that for video, we can do that for pictures, we can do that for music. And it's one of those APIs that's just really fun to work with because it's really easy to explore. Here are my documents library. Here's my music library. Here's my pictures, my saved pictures. If I want specifically to target my removable devices, it's right there.
But it's worth mentioning that documents library actually is kind of not as valuable as it sounds.
So. We're going to get to that. There's actually another demo around that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The other thing that we need to know is that if we are going to access the user's data, we do need to go into our capabilities. And you see here we have music, pictures, videos, removable storage. If we don't have removable storage checked, we're not going to be able to see the pictures on the removable storage. If we don't have pictures library checked, we can't see the pictures library. The user has to know, because this information is something that they see when they download the application. They have to know that our application has access to their library.
That's really what capabilities are about, is when the user installs the app, it's up front, it says, this app is going to access your pictures or something. And then if they don't like that idea, they could choose not to install the app.
Yep.
That's kind of what it's about.
So we're going to look at using the SD card now. And this is all about reading, writing information to and from the SD card. Our phone applications now have read-write access to that SD card, and we can store our own files and also make use of files that are already on the card. This means that we can create a way where applications can share data amongst themselves, data that doesn't necessarily live inside of the video or inside of the images.
That's kind of good, because in Windows Phone 8, we could read from an SD card,
right,
but not write to it. And now
yep.
we've got writable access as well.
So yep.
That's really cool.
This is also a fun one. There's full SD card support in the emulator. That's because the SD cards represent this shared resource. Because it represents the shared resource, there are file associations in the manifest that we have to declare. And this is what you were alluding to earlier, which is that we can write, but we can only write to file associations that we've said, I have access to this. And we'll see what that looks like in just a second. So, like I just showed, we need to check that removable storage device, make sure that the user knows we have access to it. If we're using the known folders API, just as we saw before, pictures, music, video.
But it's important to mention that you don't need to use the known folders. You could just use the regular.
You could just write to the SD card.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yep. But we do need to, if we're taking... We do need to make sure that we are registered for those file associations, the files that we are going to read off of the SD card.
And by a file association, we actually mean the file type, essentially.
The file type, right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, and that file type is an association set in the manifest. And it's set here. We have these declarations, file type associations, and we can set the properties and say, okay, I have access to .txt files, or I have access to .mp3 files. But we have to, that this is an explicit an explicit set, and part of this is that if you have some sort of customized file association that you're used to using for your application, we don't want everybody to just go in and browse all the files. If it's something that you don't want completely visible to everyone, but perhaps you have a suite of applications that use it, you can still access all those files, but you have to know they're there.
And you could create, I mean, a lot of apps developers to make use of this. If you've got a custom, you know, your own custom files, you invent your own file extension as well, and that'll only mean anything to your app, of course. So,
right.
Yeah. So
right.
This is how you do it. It doesn't have to be a .txt or a known file extension at all.
No. So getting the SD card is, we actually kind of saw that in the IntelliSense of the known folders, where we can take the removable devices and get it into this device's var, and we can just we get that folder, and then we check to see if the SD card.count is 0 or 1.
There'll never be more than one. Not on current hardware.
No, there is not more than one. It will only be one.
Or zero.
And then we can just use it in any of the ways that we've seen before. We can use the stream. We can use the simple text write is just like any other device or any other folder that we write to. And we can insert SD cards into the emulator. And this is what the demo is going to be around. This is really pretty fun. Just define a folder on your laptop, desktop, wherever you're doing your development. And it will mount that folder as an SD card in the emulator. And then you can start saving information just straight to a folder inside of your on your file system. Once you insert the SD card, it's going to create all those known folders, the document, the music, the pictures, the videos. It'll create all those folders and pictures that you take on your emulator, videos that you take on your emulator. It'll store those into that that folder system. And then we can eject our SD card and start look. We can actually poke around inside the folder system, look at the files and folders that we've created. So, looking at that from a demo perspective, okay, and this one has to run on the emulator because we're emulating the SD card. And we can take we're going to take a bunch of information. I'm trying to remember where it's saved, but you know, I honestly don't need to know where it's saved, because I'm just going to write this information and read it back. Oh, right. I'm crazy. I'm giving a demo on SD cards, and I didn't mount an SD card. I should do that first.
Yes, that might help. That's what happens when you don't actually have an SD card in your...
Right, yes. If you don't have your error handling code, it will break.
Yeah.
So I load mine into the fake SD folder. I insert the SD card. It's going to mount it. It's mounted. I see in my application, oh, I just found a new SD card. Do you want to
Well, that's
save
the phone
that's
throwing that up, isn't
right,
it?
Right, yeah. This is the phone that says, hey, new SD card. You want to save your photos and stuff on it? I say yes. And immediately it shows me I have a bunch of space free. Here's how much space you have on your SD card. And it gives them the option to save your music and videos and photos and apps and downloads, so on and so forth. Now we can write to the SD card. And we can read back from it, and we see we have a bunch of customers. It's really, really smart, really small, really hard to see. But we've got Rob Smith and Jim Smith and Joe Smith and Nigel Smith and Sally Smith and Tim Smith and Andy Smith.
The whole Smith just family.
The whole Smith family is living on our SD card right now.
Yeah.
So we can eject this SD card, and we can open it up in our file system. And you see, we have downloads, music, pictures. And we just stored in this store folder. And we can open up the customers.
So the app created that store
folder. The app created this store folder. And we can say...
where's Jason? Yeah.
Cthulhu Smith. And we'll save that. And close it. Close this. And I have found the best way to do this. This is Jason's store. Is to uninstall the application. And reload it for demo purposes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Let's try inserting the SD card and do it again. And we hopefully will see that the file that I just wrote to comes in, and we have all the data and back, having ejected and reinserted.
And presumably Cthulhu's in there, not that you could read it.
Unfortunately, it's not, and I was having this problem earlier. I thought uninstalling would fix it. but we can eject and reinsert and eject again.
All right.
So that's the SD card emulation. And it's a great way to test SD card... test your SD card use inside of the application. Make sure that your application still runs, doesn't break, whether or not it has an SD card in it, or just make sure that you're saving particular files to the SD card and reading them back off.
Cool.
And so that is data and storage, and we've actually come in on time on this one. And the next session is going to be on file sharing.
So it's kind of related. So sharing, which is actually really, really cool new feature that we've got for Windows Phone apps. And the file open pickers, which actually nicely follows on from what you've just been doing. So it's another way of getting at other files outside of the app data. So we'll... okay.
And we got a little extra cheese.
Yay.
Thank for you before we go.
Yeah, and hats off to Mr. Miles for the
cheese.
Thank you. All right. See you soon.